Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. Catherine Hughes is my guest. Catherine represents the best of activism that should inspire everyone to do what she does. She really is an exemplar, a model for what others should do. She's on a very important issue, and that's the one we'll discuss today. It's one that I've written a great deal about. I would love to do a book on it. How well it would sell, I have no idea. And, of course, that's what publishers pay the most attention to. They need a book to sell, otherwise they don't make a profit. If they don't make a profit, they go out of business. I was in small business. I know enough about that to understand that. So that's very, very important. But, Catherine, some years ago, I believe it was in 2006, she wrote an article I'll never forget. I posted it on my blog site. My blog site is really only for myself. I set it up only to keep all my articles in chronological order for myself to go back and refer to them. But over time, a lot of people discovered my blog, and they used the site. Lots of people. Not as many as I would wish. I'd love millions to go there. But what started out as virtually nothing without my intention to draw people to it has really drawn a great deal of people to it, and they follow me, and they send me emails, and they thank me for what I'm doing. But Catherine's article is there, and she called it a marvelous title. It's the kind of title that any writer dreams of using for an article that really discusses what Catherine did. She called it Crime of Compassion. She discussed Dr. Raphael Dafir, an upstate New York oncologist, and what he was sentenced to 22 years in prison, the Bush administration. And what did he do? He committed a crime of compassion. Catherine, it's great to have you back on again. Let's talk about Raphael, the latest about him, what his status is. I know he's gone through a terrible ordeal. All of it absolutely unjustifiable. And he's not alone, Catherine. So many others are today going through the exact same thing. And I literally can say, Catherine, and I'll let you jump in, that without exaggeration, thousands, I repeat, thousands of political prisoners languish in America's homeland gulag. That's beside the global torture prison network that I've also written a great deal about, that too few, damn few people know about, that everybody should. But America's gulag is absolutely heartless, it's lawless, and at least half the people in it shouldn't be there at all. Maybe three-quarters of them shouldn't be in it. That's not the way the U.S. system is run. Catherine, what's the latest on Raphael?
Maybe I'll just give a quick update on the case in case people don't know it. He's an oncologist originally from Iraq, and he's been a U.S. citizen for the last 35 years. And during the sanctions on Iraq, which were really brutal and people were starving, he founded a charity and sent food and medicine to his home country to help starving civilians. And for that, he was prosecuted. And that's really why my article at that time was called Crime of Compassion. And I'm now working on a documentary called Crime of Compassion, A Court Watcher Story, because I attended almost all of his 17-week trial and was so appalled at the injustice that for the last 10 years I've spoken out about his case, hoping that people will pay attention. And as you say, it's not just Dr. Dafir in the post 9/11 era. Muslim charity and Muslim individuals were a big target of the government. Where we stand now, Dr. Dafir has exhausted all his legal avenues except a final one, which is called a 2255 motion. And this is a motion that provides the opportunity for an individual to ask for their sentence to be vacated. And one of the most significant differences between the 2255 and a direct appeal is that new information can be introduced. All the other appeals just had to be on the court documents or the motions that were filed before trial. And, I mean, that's really good for us because we put in a Freedom of Information request for Dr. Dafir in 2010. We're very lucky to have on the support committee Bob Elmendorf, who worked in government for, you know, his whole life. So he's good at navigating this. And even though he made the request in 2010, it took 2 years to get anything. And so we're now 4 years later and we have 6 discs of 37. And of that, we only got about 2,000 pages and 4,000 were deleted. And of those 2,000 pages, about 90% is redacted. And we managed to get the discs to Dr. Dafir, so he's working on that at the moment, and I'm also looking at that. And hopefully that will provide one of the bases for this 2255 petition. I mean, it's a laborious task, and it's very difficult because so much is redacted. But it's very, very clear. You know, Dr. Dafir was convicted of white-collar crime, mainly to do with running his charity. And the government said he stole $600,000 of the charity money, and that was despite the fact that he himself donated $1.4 million. And then when people were responding to the case before it came to court, because it was about the sanctions, the government realised that that wasn't going to work, so they added 25 Medicare counts to the case. And I mean, the government wasn't saying that he stole money. They agree that patients did get treatment and medicine, and some of that medicine out of Dafir's pocket. But he was still convicted on 25 counts of Medicare fraud. And I think, you know, having sat through the trial, which was surreal, it was very clear that in the post 9/11 climate, it was very, very difficult for a Muslim to get a fair trial. And never mind that the government at state and national level was tarring him as a terrorist in the press, but the prosecutors actually put a motion in place which the judge passed, saying that the defence couldn't charge what was really going on. So what happened in the trial was that the prosecutors could hint at more charges, you know, terrorism, but the defence was never allowed to follow that line of questioning. And I mean, that made Michael Powell of the Washington Post, just before the trial started, described what was happening as shadow boxing. And I really haven't ever heard a better description, because that's exactly what it's been like. You know, in responding to the government, it's very, very difficult to get hold of things, because it's not about what it's really about. And also, I mean, the government made this case very complicated by design, because, you know, 60 counts and you start to tell people what happens and eyes glaze over. So if I could just tell your listeners about my website, which is daffyirtrial.net, so that if anyone wants to know a fuller story, they can go to the website. I have a case summary of about 600 words. And then last year, I finally managed to write the article that I'd been wanting to write for about 9 years, but I didn't know how. And that article documents exactly how the government prosecuted its case. So at the moment, Dr. Daffyir is working on his own 2255 motion. He doesn't have a lawyer. I mean, the government took all his money when he was arrested in 2003. I mean, just weeks before the Iraq war. And he's relied on family and friends to fund his appeals. And, you know, it's like there's just, the money is just, you don't have a faucet. So Dr. Daffyir's working on that, and the support committee are trying to find a pro bono lawyer that can help put whatever Dr. Daffyir discovers together in the appropriate way to be submitted. And, you know, it's really interesting because during the trial and the coverage, it was very clear in the case that directions were coming directly from Washington. And if you look at some of these cases, a lot of the same language is used. Like, for example, they called Dr. Daffyir a master manipulator, you know, because everyone who testified against him said he was like a father to them, he was like a brother. They still trusted him, you know, so the government's response to that is, well, he duped them. Or, but, you know, certainly from sitting through the trial, I experienced him through the trial as a man of the utmost compassion and integrity, and not just compassion for the people of Iraq, but compassion for the people that he treated as an oncologist. He had his office in an underserved area in Rome, New York, which was about an hour drive for him each way. He treated people for free. If people stopped coming because they couldn't pay, his office stopped sending bills. I mean, he really was someone who cared, a true humanitarian, and it really breaks my heart that he has already spent, he's in his 12th year in prison, and about several of those years were spent in a communications management unit, which was particularly brutal, you know, on his health. Lack of
a unit especially for Muslims, to make life especially hard for Muslims, Catherine.
Well, it's mostly Muslims who are in these communication management units. I mean, they've put in the odd, like, white supremacist or animal rights advocate to say that they're not Muslim prisons, but
yes,
it's very, very clear.
Catherine, let me just emphasize, it is really shocking, and people really need to know. This really shows the true face of America's dark side. Here is a glorious human being. He was all give, as I like to say, and no take. He gave himself his own money, his own time, his own medical services. He provided food and medicine for desperate Iraqis who didn't have it. He couldn't feed them all. He couldn't cure them all. He couldn't be there to treat them all. But he did whatever he could as one person and enlisted help from others through his charitable organization to literally provide humanitarian aid, and he was called a terrorist for doing that. That's the true dark face of America. It's really shocking, and it doesn't matter whether it's George Bush or Obama, because Obama does exactly the same thing. And Catherine, Obama every now and then issues pardons, and I read something about some pardons are coming up. I doubt he's going to do anything for Rafeel.
That's quite complicated because I don't know if Dr. Duffy would accept a pardon because he really feels that he didn't do anything wrong, that he did the right thing by feeding starving children. So, you know, we've talked to him about that. I think for us the next step is just this 225 habeas corpus motion. One of the really good things I might have said is that we can put, this allows for new evidence, so we can put anything from the Freedom of Information Act. But the problem is, after the last appeal was denied, you only have 1 year to put a habeas corpus 225 motion. And so Dr. Duffy only has until November, and we only have 6 of the 37 discs from the Freedom of Information request. And Bob Elmendorf has been extremely good at chasing things up. But for example, in February, I'm not exactly sure it was February, but the government said to him, you know, if you want any more information, you have to send us $500. And the Duffy Support Committee is paying for this. And so he sent it, and then he found out, like a couple of months later, that they'd actually closed the case. So we then had to open it up again. And sadly, you know, if we don't get these discs before November, I think Dr. Duffy has very little recourse. But what's really clear from these discs is that, you know, even though they prosecuted him as a white-collar criminal for the last, you know, for years before the case came to trial, and actually since he's been in prison, the government is still looking for terrorism. They've had hundreds of people working on this, and they haven't found anything that would stand up in a court of law. But they're still searching, even as late as 2010, and they're also, you know, they're keeping track of everybody who has contact with Duffy and everyone who those people have contact. So you really get an understanding of how big this dragnet is. And, you know, when you were talking about Duffy a minute ago, summarising the case, and you said, as one person, that, you know, he did this. And that's how I feel. We all have to respond as individuals. You know, we can make a difference by doing the right thing. You know, Dr. Duffy did the right thing by sending food and medicine to civilians. You know, I feel like I'm doing the right thing by speaking out and saying, you know, I sat through this case. It was a shocking miscarriage of justice. And I would just encourage people, you know, for me, regardless of the outcome, and certainly after 10 years of witnessing the legal system, I don't have much hope. I mean, you know, but it doesn't mean that it's not important to keep speaking out, keep leaving a historical record, and keep letting people like Dr. Duffy know that despite the way he's been treated by the government, there are thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people across the country and across the world who appreciate that he responded to his humanitarian urge. And that, I mean, personally, I just feel so sad that he's paid such a heavy price for his crime of compassion.
It's so true.
And on the website, there's the address if your listeners would like to write to him and just say thank you, because we have no control over the legal system, but we do have control to let him know he's not forgotten and that he's appreciated.
Catherine, I need to emphasize a few points. I absolutely agree with everything you said, and I think it's absolutely vital to challenge the system. If you don't challenge the system, it's going to continue. It'll get worse. If you do challenge it and keep challenging it, and other people challenging with you, and more people challenging it, that's the way change happens everywhere, not just in America, everywhere. It's the only way to get things changed. It never happens any other way. And I want to stress this also, Catherine. I've written a lot about the sanctions against Iraq and other sanctions like them, including the Iranian sanctions. They are absolutely lawless. They violate international law. And I've written about international law and cited and quoted directly from international law sanctions that harm ordinary people, that cause the kind of problems, you know, starvation, hunger, disease, all these kind of things against ordinary people that have nothing to do with the policies of their government, are absolutely prohibited under international law. So the sanctions against Iraq and the sanctions against Iran that harm ordinary people are absolutely lawless, and the people imposing them are criminals. They're the ones who should be prosecuted, not the victims of their crimes. And one more thing, Catherine. There are so many cases like Rafael's. There's another major one for me that I began writing about years ago. I wrote about them maybe as many as half a dozen times. It was the Holy Land Foundation of Texas, Texas-based, Dallas in Texas. You know about them. They were the largest charity, a Muslim charity in America, and the Bush administration shut them down. Shut them down for basically doing the same kind of things that Rafael did. Provided vital aid to needy people, but broke no laws whatsoever. Everything they did was legal. And I remember on their website some of the language they used, saying, we gave books, not bombs. We gave toys, not tanks. I mean, that kind of stuff makes you want to break down and cry, Catherine. And that's exactly what they did. Again, a glorious organization. And the four principals were sentenced to prison. If I recall, one of them was not in the country, and I don't know whatever happened to him. But the other three, the lowest of the three, as I recall, got 15 years in prison. But the top two, the chairman and the president, as I recall, got 65 years in prison, Catherine. 65 years.
Yes.
And they appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court turned them down flat, wouldn't even hear their case.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the ironies of that case is that the State Department sent aid to the same charities that the Holy Land Foundation sent. So, you know, they did exactly the same as the State Department, yet they were still prosecuted. And actually, I mean, just to give you an example of the unequal sentencing between people, you know, Dr. Dafir got 22 years for sending food to starving children, but there was a billionaire, a Texas oil businessman, Oscar Wyatt, who had given Saddam Hussein kickbacks in the oil for food program. And when he was sentenced, he got something like a year or two, and it could be served at the weekends, and he was given time off for good behaviour, you know. And at that time, Dr. Dafir was in the communications management unit, where he was monitored 24 hours. Access to health care was very difficult. He had 15 minutes.
Catherine, let me break in again, because I believe we only have about a minute left. And if there's an important point or two that you want to stress, please use the remaining time to do it. But when we hear the music, it means I have to end the program.
That's fine. Just one thing I'd like to say. I mentioned before that, you know, the orders seem to be coming from Washington, and the people who prosecuted the case and heard the case, it certainly didn't do their careers any harm. District Attorney Glenn Sudabe was made a federal judge soon after it, and Judge Mordew, who oversaw the case, was made the chief justice of the local court in 2006, and then in 2011 he was promoted to a senior judge of the district court. I think we just have to keep speaking out and saying this isn't right. And I don't know how long it will take, but as long as we leave a historical record, people will know. I mean, my motivation comes from seeing a documentary as a teenager of the Allies going into Bergen-Belsen. And after 9/11, alarm bells just started going off in my head about what, how Muslims were being demonized. And that was a big reason I decided to attend Dr. Dafir's trial. And I, you know, it's still going on. And it's hard for Muslims to speak out because they are targets. That's why I think it's so important for people like me and you and your listeners to stand up and say this isn't right. We want equal justice for all citizens in this country.
Indeed so, Catherine. I think the message of this program is very simple. Crime in high places pays, good deeds are punished, and the best America has are the ones who are so badly brutalized by a system that's totally corrupted beyond fixing, Catherine. It was wonderful having you on. I look forward to getting you back for another update about Rafeel and this important topic. Many thanks, Catherine.
Thank you, Steve.
Join us Sunday live. We'll be on. Join us. Make it a regular habit.